So oil prices just plunged like over 5% in a matter of seconds this morning.
Yeah, a massive drop.
Right, and it's sending this crazy ripple effect all the way to the American tech sector. Welcome to your Tuesday, July 28th, 2026 morning briefing on Front Page. We are jumping straight in today. I mean, the biggest headline driving global markets right now is that the U.S. has officially paused military strikes against Iran.
Right. And the market reaction to that pause was just, well, it was instantaneous.
Oh, completely.
I mean, the second that news hit the wire, crude just dropped to $82.61 a barrel.
Wow.
Because when you stop launching missiles near, the world's most critical energy choke points, the risk premium on oil basically evaporates.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
And almost immediately, we saw Oman and Iran scrambling to formalize a diplomatic pact to secure shipping through the Strait of Hormuz.
I really want to look at the mechanics of this because the Strait of Hormuz is essentially like the global economy's arterial vein. If you think of the US strikes as a tourniquet on that vein, loosening it doesn't just lower oil prices. It instantly redirects all that geopolitical pressure to other parts of the system. It's almost like a high-stakes game of Jenga.
That's actually a great way to look at it.
You pull out one piece, right, like the US strikes, and the entire weight shifts on to places like Jordan. They're feeling that redirected pressure intensely right now.
Oh, absolutely, because Jordan is caught in this incredibly fragile dilemma. I mean, historically, they've been this bedrock U.S. partner in the Middle East.
Right, a really quiet partner.
Exactly. They survive by keeping that relationship extremely low profile. But you really can't be a quiet buffer state when Iranian ballistic missiles are just, flying through your airspace.
No, definitely not. And if you're the Jordanian government, that is just a nightmare scenario because your population is overwhelmingly pro-Palestinian and highly suspicious of this deep U.S. military presence.
Right. The internal friction there has to be at a total boiling point.
Oh, for sure.
And while Jordan is trying to manage that internal stability, other players are looking at this U.S.-Iran pause as basically a window of opportunity. Like the Houthis in Yemen.
Right.
They had that fragile truce dating back to 2022. But with Washington and Tehran momentarily distracted, the Houthis are pivoting hard. They're targeting Saudi Arabia's weak spots.
Because they know Saudi Arabia's in the middle of this massive economic rebranding.
Exactly.
They're trying to build this glittering tourism and business hub, and the last thing they want is a messy regional war scaring off foreign capital. But the Houthis just intercepted, or wait, Saudi Arabia just intercepted Houthi drones, right?
Yeah, they intercepted a wave of drones launched at their facilities over the weekend.
Man. Which brings us to a part of the world most people probably wouldn't connect to, a Middle Eastern ceasefire, which is the Caspian Sea.
Right. Ukraine is brilliantly exploiting this exact moment.
Yeah, President Zelensky just announced that Ukrainian drones hit military supply lines right in the Caspian Sea.
And the specific targets are what's key here.
Right.
They hit a Russian oil field, a missile boat, and ships transporting Iranian drones to Russia.
Okay, let me stop you there because the Caspian Sea is, landlocked.
Yeah.
By hitting Iranian assets there, is Ukraine effectively fighting two wars now?
I mean, they're actively collapsing two separate fronts into one. The Caspian has become this fascinating nexus point where the European war and the Middle Eastern conflicts basically merge.
Wow, okay.
And by striking back at the source, Ukraine is fundamentally disrupting the supply chain that fuels both conflicts, which is huge for global supply chains in general.
Absolutely. And before we get into how all this hits the US, I have to bring up this totally different survival tactic happening in Cuba right now.
Oh, the energy situation there.
Yes, it's wild. If you want to see what happens when a country is just entirely cut off from the global energy system, look at Havana. 6 months into severe blackouts from the Trump administration's oil blockade, the whole grid is basically down.
Right, they expected the grid to just collapse entirely.
But they're adapting in this crazy way. Cubans are actively trading in those iconic 1950s American gas guzzlers for Chinese electric motorcycles.
Wait, but how are they charging electric vehicles if the power is out most of the day?
That's the genius part. They're importing these massive lithium batteries. When the grid flickers on, they hypercharge the batteries. Then they use that stored power to run fans, watch TV, and charge those Chinese bikes during the blackouts.
That's incredible. Just a totally parallel energy economy.
Yeah, exactly.
But if we pull back, whether it's lithium in Cuba or drones in the Caspian,
Right.
all these supply chain shocks funnel directly into the American economy.
Right.
And that's exactly what the Federal Reserve is dealing with, or well, maybe fighting over right now.
Yeah, fighting is the right word, because Fed Chair Kevin Warsh is heading into this crucial July meeting, and he wants a good family fight over rate cuts versus inflation fears.
He really does. He hosted this dinner with 18 Fed officials and told them he wants outside panels to audit the Fed's internal methods.
Which got massive pushback from Governor Christopher Waller.
Oh, completely. Waller was basically like, we're the central bank. There's no secret group of outside experts who know better than us.
Right. And Warsh is embracing this totally tight-lipped strategy. He wants to stop telegraphing the Fed's moves to the public.
Yeah, going completely silent.
But let me push back on that logic for a second. If the Fed's job is to stabilize the economy, isn't a tight-lipped chairman playing poker with the public just creating, like, way more market anxiety?
Oh, absolutely. Wall Street hates a vacuum.
Exactly.
Warsh wants the raw data to dictate the outcome, not market feelings. But your point about the vacuum is exactly what's driving this massive whiplash in the tech sector right now.
Whiplash is almost an understatement. The markets are swinging so wildly. I mean, Elon Musk is jokingly calling himself a quote-unquote former trillionaire on X.
Yeah, because SpaceX's stock valuation got cut nearly in half since its $75 billion IPO.
And Tesla fell 18% just this week.
Right, because when capital is expensive and the Fed won't communicate, investors lose their patience for these long-term AI and robotics bets. They just pull their money out.
And while America has this tech wobble, look at China. This Chinese memory chip maker, CXMT, just had a massive Shanghai debut.
Huge debut. They hit a $484 billion valuation.
Which topped the Industrial and Commercial Bank of China.
Yeah, a chip maker is now mainland China's most valuable company.
Why is a memory chip maker suddenly worth more than massive banks?
Because memory chips are basically the short-term brain for AI systems. Without them, you can't train advanced AI models. And CXMT is China's state-backed national champion.
So while our tech sector is dropping due to free market anxiety over the Fed, China is using state power to consolidate their tech independence. That is a massive shift in the global tech war.
It really is. It's the weaponization of domestic financial firepower.
Yeah, and we are seeing a very similar dynamic play out here at home, right ahead of the midterms. The federal government and states are totally clashing over resources.
You're talking about the Department of Energy filing.
Yes. In this stunning court filing, the DOE actually admitted that the Trump administration's decision to cut $7.6 billion in clean energy funding was based solely on whether the recipient was in a blue state.
Right, impacting major projects like California's Artesia Hydrogen Hub and the University of California.
Not based on performance metrics, just political identity. It's like a surgeon selectively starving organs they don't like.
Yeah.
Are we witnessing a complete decoupling of federal and state realities?
I mean, legally, it's unprecedented for a federal agency to blatantly admit in a court filing that political targeting was their sole metric. It really undermines the whole historical framework of how federal grant systems work.
It's just wild. And this political maneuvering is spilling over into voting rights, too. The Trump administration is asking the Supreme Court to allow an executive order limiting mail-in voting for the midterms.
Right, after a Boston appeals court blocked it for threatening to disenfranchise voters.
Meanwhile, states like California are making their own countermoves. The California Voter Foundation is pushing reforms to speed up their really slow vote count.
Yeah, trying to shrink that signature curing timeline from 22 days down to 14.
And calling close races by the Friday after Election Day.
Which is all about reducing the dead air where election conspiracy theories tend to grow.
Absolutely. And then there's the DOJ moving to revoke citizenship.
In the denaturalization cases, yeah.
They've moved to revoke the citizenship of nearly 90 people just since the start of 2025. With a goal of 250 by October.
Which is expanding a practice that historically was exceptionally rare.
Yeah, it used to just be for hidden war criminals or things like that. Now it's a massive bureaucratic apparatus. So, right. I mean, we have politicians fighting over billions in funding and voting rights. But on a local level, communities are fighting over a way more fundamental resource, water.
Right, we're seeing huge infrastructure failures hitting local towns.
Take Kearney, Arizona, population 2,000. Mayor Curtis Stacey starts his day checking two websites, one showing their empty reservoir and one showing if they're legally allowed to borrow water.
Because Kearney is at the absolute bottom of this very complex web of Western water rights.
Yeah, and the anxiety there is just unreal. He recently issued a town newsletter with literally 20 exclamation points at the end saying, "This situation is almost certainly temporary."
Which is tough when you're dealing with a regional mega drought. scarcity is a massive issue.
But it's not just scarcity, it's contamination too. The Hyatt family in Washington State lives next to an army base, and their well is contaminated with PFAS, these forever chemicals.
Right, the stuff used in military firefighting foam that just never breaks down in the environment.
They have to use bottled water for everything, and they actually pack their kids into the car to bathe them at a local gym.
Oh, wow.
Just so they don't swallow toxic water. And a new USA Today analysis reveals the military quietly moved its deadlines to clean up these toxic PFAS at hundreds of bases out by decades.
Some aren't scheduled until after 2042.
Wait, 2042? That's an entire generation.
Yeah, it really is.
I am in sheer disbelief over this. If a town was running out of oil, the military would fix it tomorrow. But for poisoned drinking water, families are told to wait 20 years.
It's the dual threat facing the American West right now.
Yeah.
The mega drought means you don't have enough water, and forever chemicals mean the water you do have is completely unusable.
Man. Let's just zoom out from all these macro crises for a second. We've got geopolitical ripple effects, poisoned water, political retaliation. How do individuals actually navigate their daily lives in 2026?
Well, they try to find control wherever they can, even in their romantic lives.
Yes, the spreadsheet dating.
Right, these love hackers using data to cure their dating woes.
I was reading about this 27-year-old, Carolyn Travis. She was on a date with an older engineer, went to the bathroom, and had her friends plug his traits into this app called Spread.
Yeah, using visual data to literally prove mathematically that the relationship was doomed.
I mean, between algorithms and spreadsheets, are we turning romance into a supply chain issue? Are we just optimizing the magic out of life?
It sounds funny, but it actually connects to a deeply sobering demographic shift.
Really? How so?
Look at U.S. cities seeing this rapid decline in children. In El Paso's Willows neighborhood, this resident, Fernando Escobedo, noticed his 12-year-old is one of the only kids left on a cul-de-sac that used to be totally full of children.
Wow.
When you have a generation squeezed by economic uncertainty, political chaos, environmental issues, people seek absolute data-driven control over their personal variables.
So they use a spreadsheet for dating because they can't afford a mistake.
Exactly. It's a profound society-wide risk aversion.
That makes total sense, but man, it's bleak.
It is.
But even with all that, we still see these cultural milestones of people stubbornly refusing to optimize, like L.A. artist Betay Sar, who just passed away at 99.
Right. She spent her whole career subverting racist figures in her art.
Reclaiming power, completely refusing the narrative handed to her. And then there's 87-year-old Sandy Weisswasser.
Oh, the Kennedy Center tours.
Yeah. The institution's funding and programming have been completely purged. It's basically a gutted building. But she still shows up to give free tours to dwindling visitors, just telling them what the institution used to be.
Which is completely inefficient, but she just refuses to let that memory be erased.
Exactly. And finally, 18-year-old Maya Merhidge. She swims open ocean ultramarathons through jellyfish and sharks to raise money for pediatric cancer research.
Right, stepping into incredibly dangerous waters on purpose.
She says she borrows the bravery of young cancer patients when she's out there. It's the ultimate contrast to spreadsheet dating. She isn't eliminating risk. She's embracing it for someone else.
That's a really powerful distinction.
And I think that's a perfect place to wrap up today. We started today looking at nations fighting over oil and water and ended with individuals trying to algorithmically control love.
Yeah, it's a huge spectrum.
It really is. In a world of increasing extremes and endless data, maybe the ultimate resource we're all actually running out of isn't water or capital, but simply patience. It makes you wonder what elements of your own life you're trying to micromanage and whether it's time to let a little uncertainty back in.
That's a great question to leave on.
Something to chew on as you start your Tuesday. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive, and we'll catch you tomorrow on Front Page.